And welcome back again, ladies and gentlemen, to another episode of This Is Africa. My name is Adama.
Hi, guys. I'm Tamba.
Welcome back. My name is Amiri.
What's up, y'all? My name is Lloyd.
Welcome, welcome, guys. How's everybody been? You know what I mean?
Yeah, we're good, man. Good.
Good. Lloyd,
yeah, bro. I'm good. I'm chilling. Glad to be alive, you know?
I mean, it's too cold outside, so I don't know. I'm going to just stay in the house and keep warm, you know, about that.
Speaking about temperatures, I guess what's brought us here today for this discussion. Today, guys, we'll be talking about climate change. And I guess to start, the big question that we've been hearing around the block that everybody has been dying to have answered is climate change real? Is it a real thing? And how is it affecting... is it real? But once we get past that on a serious note, though, how is it affecting Africa, the Caribbeans, and its peoples?
Yeah, a simple answer. It's real. Yes, it's real.
Nah, man. It's been promoted by 5G. Nah, I'm just making a joke. Just joke. But in all seriousness, though, climate change is real, especially given what's going on in not only the world, but also in the African continent as well, where, you know, natural resources are being depleted because of human activity, where we're having a lot of extreme weather patterns, again, due to human activities, and basically put in not only ourselves, but our future generation in a big amount of trouble in the future because we choose not to take climate change very seriously. So yeah, climate change is real and we're witnessing it right now today.
Yeah, also to add to that, like even on the African continent, the whole continent altogether, we're only responsible for about 5% of the carbon emission in the world. It's well, for the 48 countries, sub-Saharan Africa countries, less than 1%. But the whole Africa, it's 5%. And we're suffering the most from it on the continent. You know, you see people migrating to different places due to climate change. A lot of conflict has, you know, come about due to climate change. And also, it's also slowing down the development process. So, yeah. It is really affecting the African continent, and can't wait to get into it.
Yeah, to add on to that too, I feel like one of the main problems is so that the lack of awareness of the problem on the continent and developing countries too, you know? So yeah, I believe that like the UN does its job in terms of putting the information out there so that the public is aware of the climate change, but it's for us as a general public to accept the fact and make small behavioral changes, you know? So I think that's one of the main problems too.
Yeah, now speaking to that, information definitely is the biggest thing. Misinformation, those things are like prevalent topics going on in our world today. And then to Amiri's point, like, I guess like is the public aware and like how much? Because part of the reason why I even started off by asking, is it real? As you know, it's pretty much a jokey question. We know it is. But the public's awareness, like, it seems like people know, but at the same time, it seems like people aren't necessarily given enough information to do anything about it. You know what I mean? And I don't know who to blame that on. Because I feel like enough people have spoken about it for us to get up and find our own information to make an impact in some form, some way. But at the same time, our government can still do more. So I don't know.
I'm kind of in the middle of what you just said, because there's only so much the public could do. Because the people that are responsible for most of the carbon emission, I guess, in the world are big corporations that have big plants in different parts of the world. Of course, we contribute to it by driving our cars and stuff like that. But the people that are manufacturing these cars are the ones really doing the damage. And specifically with Africa, we don't have these big plants on the continent. And by awareness to the public, if you live like in a city in an African country, you wouldn't really know the effect right away. But if you live in the rural areas where there are farmers and stuff like that, they really feel it. They see it. They see their, you know, their crops drying. They see that year and year after year, they have less crops. So to answer your question, yes, they notice it. The public is aware to a certain extent.
Well, in the Caribbean, I know that, like, the effects of the causes of climate change are a little bit more hands-on, because, like, say, like, a flood, hurricane, or like, biological things are happening within the country. That's a more hands-on, direct effect of climate change, and I feel like the general public don't really understand what is causing the problem, you know, and where the problem is coming from. And it's really due to, like, industrial countries, you know, that is emitting carbon dioxide into the air. And that have a direct lineage to affecting these smaller countries, you know. So it's just for them to be aware that how much carbon dioxide being emitted into the air, and creating solutions in terms of lessening that carbon dioxide.
All right, you know how, like, sometimes people do stuff and, like, they don't necessarily know the effects of, like, what they're doing? And sometimes people do stuff and know the effects, but it's just, like, forget it. Like, it's worth it. The effects are worth it. TK, kind of when you said, like, that there's only so much people could do, I don't know about that. Like, because my kind of problem with, like, one of my problems with, like, climate change and, like, how maybe we're demanding governments to do certain things or do more and this, that, and third, it's also our fault in a sense. Like, there's a demand by the consumer for goods, for products. There's a voice. Like, times have shown us that, like, if we demand certain changes from companies, big corporations, they can make those changes. But because there's such high demand for products and consumer goods that are made in these big factories all over the world, what are companies supposed to do other than oblige? I mean, that's where, like, the money's coming in. Like, that's what I'm like. I feel like the people are way more accountable than we really think.
I mean, if you're talking about corporations and them obliging to the demands of consumerism, I believe that what corporations can do is just change their production technology to more sustainable means of creating whatever products that they make. You know, they have the opportunity to do so. However, that's where it goes into cost and them finding other ways to not incur that cost, like, let's say, having carbon taxes imposed on them. Some corporations like it, others don't welcome it. But that's one thing that big corporations can do. Going back to what Tamba said, I kind of agree with you in saying that, like, people can do certain things to a certain extent, but I feel like they can do more also as well. Yes, you are right that Africa does not emit a significant amount of carbon dioxide or greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, but that doesn't mean that, like, we should also try to do so. Like, I mean, I'm glad that we're not emitting that much, contributing to the problem. I'm glad we're not. However, I see this as a chance for Africa to invest themselves into sustainable means of energy, or finding innovative ways to adapt to climate change better. So I see this as a opportunity for growth.
And also, Adama, to answer your question, yes, I believe like, when there's a demand, the corporations, from their standpoint, they're just going to keep making it because we're asking for it. But this is where the government steps in. Foreign governments, for example, in America, when Biden came in, he started making certain cuts to how much these companies could produce. He stopped the drilling of oil in the U.S. You know what I mean? So little things like that, that the government can implement in their policy or their agenda, that would kind of deter these corporations to do the damage they're doing. Because at the end of the day, it's one planet, man. We all live on this. So we all have to be mindful of what's going on.
Yeah, but for that, to piggyback off that point, though, some economies rely only on some natural resources. So therefore, like say for Trinidad, for instance, I'm going to speak on Trinidad. Their main economy is gas and oil. You know, they export gas and oil. So to say to kind of stop that supply, it's kind of like saying, it's like kind of like making a whole change in the economy. And that's very tough to do.
Yeah, you know? And just to answer your question, Maria, I wasn't talking about Trinidad because Trinidad doesn't even account for that much of the carbon emission in the world. I was talking more like China, the U.S.,
true.
Russia, like yeah. countries like that, not really true. Trinidad. Yeah.
I guess like then another point, like we know climate change is real. Again, this will be very clear again. Climate change is very real. We understand that there's tons of things that it brings. It actually brings actual calamity at points. It can bring great devastation and great impact to people's livelihoods and everything else that comes with. One of the biggest things that climate change affects, of course, is weather patterns. Flooding is one of them. And a lot of North Africa and West Africans have to deal with that. What are some other things that we feel like climate change like blames? And I guess things that we should definitely point out so people that don't know are a little more aware of this.
One thing is changing patterns in precipitation. And also extended periods of droughts, because in most African countries is usually two seasons. You have the wet and the dry seasons. So especially to add on to what Tamba said, if you're in rural areas or if you're a big chunk of your economy is based on the agriculture sector and you have extended periods of droughts, this can actually disrupt a lot of things, not only financially, but in your livelihood, livelihood as well. Let's say for farmers, you don't have enough rainfall for you to have a good harvest. For herdsmen, you don't have, you know, a freshwater streams for your herds to drink out of, and you find just your cattle, so your goats or your sheep's, you know, dead from thirst. These are some of the things that can affect a lot of countries in Africa, their livelihoods, their economy, basically in every aspect of their lives, either directly or indirectly, in my opinion.
Yeah, and to add more to what Lord is saying, that can even cause a conflict. You know, when there's a drought and the farmers can't grow their crops, or the herders' livestock needs food now. They immigrate to areas where there are crops, there are fresh water, and then you're coming into somebody else's town. For example, I can give this example in my country, Mali. What the UN categorized now as an ethnic conflict in the center of Mali stemmed from the Dogon people. You know, they were the Dogon people are an ethnic or a tribe in Mali, and they are farmers, and the Fulanis are herders. So the Fulanis in their area were running out of crops to feed their livestock, and they went into the Dogon area and started eating, their animals started eating the Dogon's crops. And what that created is a big conflict between the two, because this is literally life or death to them. This is how they make their money on both sides. And this is the effect of climate change. While one area is getting dry, you move to another area in order to, you know, feed your livestock or find means to make money. And that created a huge conflict between the two that went above just the how it started fundamentally just based on climate change. So now they just don't like each other, you know, and they categorize it as ethnic conflict. But really the problem is that the climate is changing, and that was their way of adapting. That was like part of the growing pains. So that's one of them as well.
Also, too, it kind of stops the government from spending a lot of money, too, because, say, like, a flood or hurricane happened, the government have to spend money to revamp people's lives, you know?
But you said stops or makes government spend more money?
It kind of prevents the government from spending more money, you know? Because, say, a flood happened, now somebody's house gets flooded out, the government have to put out or send resources or invest into resources to help revamp that family's life, you know? So it's a way of like kind of like preventing of spending more money for the government, you know?
Yeah. Or what's been happening instead of the government, you know, trying to help. Obviously, it's a big task because in Africa there's a lot going on. When you speak of Africa, we have the governance issue, we have the corruption issue. There's a bunch of economic things. Plus, if the climate is changing, when something like Amiri said, a flood, how are they supposed? Their hands are tied at this point. They don't have enough to do it. And what do these people do? They migrate to other places in that country causing a different look, you know, and that could create conflict, you know, but they're just going there to look for a better livelihood where they can actually access water and things such as of that nature. Like, for example, in Somalia, there was a huge flood not too long that displaced hundreds of thousands of people. You know, how is the government supposed to respond to that? Obviously, there should be protocols for them to respond, but, you know, to Amiri's point, I have to agree.
Even speaking about other conflicts, looking at one here, like on the border of Ethiopia and Kenya, I guess due to water droughts and stuff like that, there's a small water access point that's being guarded by one tribe against the Kenyan border police and the Turkana tribe. And it's just one tribe just trying to hold off this water access point just to make sure that their tribe gets the most that it can. And it's like, how do you determine that? Like, you know, like you can't say this side is wrong or this side is more right. Also, sharing. How is sharing supposed to work in these scenarios? You know what I mean? Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, it's tough. And not only that, something I think that's really interesting, and that could be like a focal point, especially in Africa, that people do. Like, zebras are going extinct because of this. Animals are like migrating. Animals are leaving certain areas. Like, for example, in Kenya, the zebras are leaving, and Kenya has a huge tourism, you know, platform with the safaris. And if you go there, maybe in 10 years, I'm just speculating here, but if it keeps going this way in 10 years, there might be no zebras in Kenya. You might have to go find the zebras in a country neighboring Kenya now. You know what I mean? Like, all that affects every little thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, also too, not only animals inland too, but climate change is affecting like coastal habitats too, you know. So like, say like, so I'm gonna use Trinidad as another example again, you know. Climate change is affecting certain ecosystems within the sea and stuff, like certain fishes, some things called in the sea that like, not sea animals, like,
you mean coral reefs?
Yeah, coral reefs. Yes, coral reefs. Yeah, so that's a huge thing for like all the fishermen and people, for a way of people of getting food to eat. So like, that's a way of like affecting people's lives too, directly, you know.
It's even crazy thinking about it. Like, I just realized people have been telling us about climate change for a very long time. And I like, you know, like, I don't know, due to my ignorance, I don't know what it is. Like, I just didn't really, maybe I just didn't, lack of understanding. I didn't know what really was going on. But I can remember commercials, like, growing up of, like, the ice cap melting. And, like, you know, the commercials they play on TV sometimes, like, donate this much, polar bears are losing their homes and, like, just swimming in water and coming closer to, like, different areas they're not supposed to. Like, I didn't realize that was climate change. And now thinking about it kind of, like, scares me a little bit. Like, dang, like, this has been in front of us for so long. And yet we have been incapable of doing anything. And I think, like, I mean, we have to put blame on, I feel like we have to put more blame on ourselves than we can the government. Like, governments have shown us incompetence and inability to do anything without the push of the people. And I think we have to demand more. Like, just as people, we have to demand more before we can expect them to do more.
Are you talking about governments like the U.S. government, or are you talking about government in African countries as well?
Yeah, government.
People need to push people and.
Yeah, especially even outside of. I mean, this can even connect to things outside of climate change for the sake of the conversation. Like, in American governments all over the world, in Africa especially, like, demand more.
What I'm saying, we're not. The African continent as a whole is only responsible for less than 5% of the carbon emission. So, what else do their government. Like, what else can the people tell the government if they're not making it?
But climate change is a global thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a global effort.
Yep.
Right? All the countries of the world are, most of the countries in the world are trying to work together to solve this solution. The continent of Africa has weight, has push and pull. Demand more of your government to come out and be more vocal when speaking to other governments or whatever it may be. And even in the diaspora that we talk about, even us people who aren't necessarily in Africa, but are Africans in other places, being more vocal and doing more that we can do. So I feel like those are the areas that I'm speaking about specifically.
And I also believe that too, like, the world, the more powerful world government should at least inform the public more about the effects of climate change. Because say if you live in a big city like New York City, you wouldn't really understand the effects of climate change compared to if you live in a rural area of a small island or inland country within the African continent. So that's a huge problem right there too for itself. You know.
Wait. So TK, quick question. You talking about Africa adding what having 5% of the world's carbon emission, right? So my question is, are you seeing this as like a good thing for Africa? Like, where do you stand? I'm trying to figure out like what's your intention behind that statement, like for the 5%. Like,
I'm just saying, I was just answering Adama's question, saying that we need to put pressures on our African governments, but what pressure are you putting on them if they're not the one causing the like all this emission in the world? They're not the one accelerating the process of climate change. Now, what they could do, what I would think is at UN climate change meetings, you know, they could vote and put pressures in those areas on foreign governments to do, hold them accountable for the damage they are doing. But exactly. Our people personally to go to our government and yell at them like they're the ones causing all of this would be unfair. That's what I was saying.
All right, yeah, true, but also I believe that African governments and also people can find ways to innovate and either adapt to climate change or find ways to insulate themselves from the negative impact of climate change, or to invest in something that I believe that could really help diversify and enhance the African economy and African people, which is investing in renewable sources of energy. I know that some African countries, especially for Ghana, we get most of our electricity from hydropower because of the dam that was built in Akosombo when Kwame Nkrumah was president, and has been supplying energy to not only Ghana, but to our neighboring countries such as Burkina Faso. So I see this as a way for African government, African people to actually want renewable sources of energy or push forward for that. I know that there are going to be big costs in the beginning, but definitely I believe has long-term benefits and long-term dividends once we invest heavily into renewable sources of energy. Yes, just because we're not the sole problem or adding to the problem or a big part of the problem, that doesn't mean that we can not look into other avenues of making sure that we don't add to the problem and find ways to either adapt to the problem or insulate yourself to the problem or find ways to innovate because of what's coming next.
I sort of agree with you on that, but I want to bring to you this point. So there's this lady that I found while doing my research about this. Her name is Rose M. Mutiso, and I would encourage you guys to go look at her videos on YouTube and read her articles that she posts on the internet. Her argument is kind of like yours, but the only place she differs, so she's from Kenya originally, and what her argument is that, you know, we're not the cause. Like I was saying, we're not the cause of climate change, the African continent, okay? Even though we're all in a global world, right? We all contribute to this, but we're not the cause per se. We are merely victims. And if you look at 48 countries combined, right, in Africa, they're responsible for less than 1% of the carbon emission in the world. So her argument was that we, in order to develop, you know, we need to have these, you know, power plants that run on natural gases in order to develop, just like the Western countries or China or these countries have been doing. So her argument is that short term, right, because there's a carbon budget, right? And she was saying that the African continent must be allowed, right, to produce some of those plants in order to develop, right? Because in order for the infrastructure to be built, we need the energy to back it somehow. So short term, we need to be allowed. Because even if we, on the continent, if we produce three times more than we're doing right now, it still won't even account for 1% of what's going on in the world, right? So in the car, let's just say, for example, for people listening, if there's a slice of pie, China already took 25% of the pie. The U.S. took another 15%, and the rest of the world took about another 25%, just them combined, right? And Africa is only responsible for less than 1%, right? So there's still 25% of the pie left. So even if we triple what we're doing right now, we're only going to get another 1% of the pie. So it's like the budget, we're not like destroying the budget. We're still, you know, in the confines. So short in the confines of, you know, developing our countries while not hurting the environment that much. So that only accounts for, let's say, short term. But long term now, what you said, is I completely agree with it. We need to build our infrastructure to start going towards renewable energy. But short term, I believe, and she believes, that we need to use that carbon emission to create infrastructure, irrigation systems, cold storage, you know, energy intensive stuff so we could develop. So that was her argument. I encourage you guys to check her out. It's really, really informative.
So the government says I have to divert money to other things.
I'm weak. I'm glad that you agree with me long term. Short term wise, the argument that you're agreeing with and what she's saying, I disagree with it because I believe that it's going to handicap us in the future. Because of course, yes, we're not a big player in this issue that we're facing, but that doesn't mean we should add on to it. Just because there's a carbon budget does not mean that carbon dioxide is good for the environment. No, it's still bad for the environment. So of course, yes, adding on to the budget, to the carbon budget, or not adding too much because Africa is not, you know, emitting the most greenhouse gases into the atmosphere, shouldn't incentivize us to do so because it's still a big problem. You know, it's still carbon dioxide, it's still greenhouse gases, it still affects our environment negatively. Where I see this as an opportunity where a lot of the Western powers that we see today, part of the reason why they were able to be so great right now is that they took advantage of a natural resource in the Industrial Revolution, which was fossil fuels, right? So how about Africa taking advantage of a new type of quote-unquote, well, not Industrial Revolution, but in terms of sustainable energy revolution, where we could take advantage of sustainable energy, you know, or sustainable resources, where we're not only providing for the needs and want of the present and the future, but we're also taking care of our planet and, one, not adding on to the problem, and two, finding solutions and ways to, you know, insulate ourselves or prevent ourselves from even entering into that problem. You know, so again, I get the short term solution. I get it, but I feel it would just handicap us. That's a handicap.
Well, I guess you would disagree with her. I guess what I would say, just in response to what you just said, renewable energy costs a lot of money. You know, you're asking the African continent to do something that even the West hasn't been able to do yet, due to the fact that it costs so much. So for me, from her point of view, it's kind of unfair, but I still see what you're saying. I see your point.
I mean, yes, I get that it costs a lot, but honestly, for me, I'm a firm believer in short-term costs for long-term gain. So,
yeah, of course you say that because you're not starving. You're not the people migrating. like it's affected them. They need something right now. But then again, like I said, I understand your point. Moving on.
Moving on, since we sound like experts, let's test our knowledge on climate change, ladies and gentlemen. We
have game time.
Game time. You know we love games on this show. So right now I have in front of me Columbia University interactive quiz on climate change and its impacts. I'm gonna start off easy. We spoke about weather patterns earlier, correct? All right. How can extreme events like hurricanes, drought, and wildfires impact energy infrastructure? Water shortages, power outages, or higher electricity and gas prices? Or are all the answers that?
I'm going to go with all the above.
I'm going to follow Amiri, all the above.
All the above.
You are correct, ladies and gentlemen. You guys are gents, only gents here. You guys are correct. Yeah, you know, yeah, facts. If you guys are answering at home, definitely, ladies and gents. If you got it right, ladies and gents, you are correct. All right, next question. How do climate factors like temperature, precipitation, and humidity relate to vector-borne diseases. Vector-borne diseases. Heavy rain increases the risk of animals transmitting rabies. Milder winters increase the tick density of risk of Lyme. Dry summers and drought increase the risk of West Nile virus. And snowstorms increase mosquito density and risk of malaria.
All right, snow density, not really. Say the other options.
Snow density, you said no, so I'll read the other ones other than snow density. Dry summers and drought increase the risk of West Nile virus. Milder winters increase the tick density and risk of Lyme disease. And heavy rain increases the risk of animals transmitting rabies.
Heavy rain and rabies. I don't see no correlation with that, so I'll probably go with West Nile.
The droughts. West Nile? Yeah, West Nile?
I'm going with the second answer.
Okay. Milder winters?
Yeah, I'm going to say dry summers, drought increase the risk of West Nile.
The answer is milder winters increase the tick density and risk of Lyme.
Thank you. You are correct. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Expert.
Next time you're going to play for money.
Next question. Why are forests important for mitigating climate change? A. Forests serve as a sink in the carbon cycle. B. Trees provide building materials.
A.
C. Trees are an important food source. And D. Leaves of trees reflect all sunlight away from the earth.
Yeah, trees are carbon sinks. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with that too.
This feels like a high school one, right? Doesn't it?
Yeah,
this definitely feels like a high school one. I hope so. If we got that wrong, we thought we learned anything. Nothing. What is the greenhouse effect? The name of climate change legislation that passed by Congress. When you paint your house green to become an environmentalist. When the gases in our atmosphere trap heat and block it from escaping our planet. Or lastly, when you build a greenhouse.
Trapping heat from letting it escape from our planet. The third option.
Yeah, I'm agree with that too.
Yep. The answer is correct. I'm gonna give you guys a hard one. This one. Right here we go. Just to end us off for the night. What was agreed to in the Paris Agreement that came out of COP21 held in Paris in 2015? Was it A, to protect biodiversity and end the deforestation of the world's rainforest? B, to keep global temperature rise well below 2 degrees Celsius pre-industrial levels and to pursue a path to limit warming to 1.5 degrees Celsius. C, to limit sea level rise to 3 feet above current levels. Or D, to pursue a goal of 100% clean and renewable energy.
B.
To keep it.
I'm going to go with A, to protect biodiversity and the end of deforestation.
I'm going to go with C just because these two went with A and B.
I guess it was. So what? I'm going to go with D to cover all our bases?
Yeah.
So
what's your answer? The answer is C, to limit the rise of sea level.
The answer is B, Mr. Ansa. You pay attention, don't you?
Nah, you be cheating.
More or less. But all right, that's all we have for you guys today. But yeah, guys, thanks for coming again. Thanks for listening in. That's all we have for you guys today. Follow us on Instagram at t.i.a_pod, at Twitter, TIA_pod. And if you'd enjoyed the conversation or not, give us feedback, like, comment, and share. We want to get better and grow with the audience. So hopefully we embark on a fruitful journey and we grow blissfully, you know? So yeah, together. Thank you guys. See you soon.
Peace.
Pick them one by one. Make me bust my gun. Poison us like a long python. Gunfire in 911 dying.